Welcome to ZDNet's consumerization blog. I'm your host, Ken Hess, and today is October 17th, 2012. We're diverging a bit from the typical consumerization and BYOD topics to bring you something special, a look at tech jobs, the trends, and outlook for 2013. My guest today is Dr. Tracy Weiland-Dugenty of the Apollo Research Institute, who is a published author, speaker, consultant, university scholar, and expert in the fields of education, technology, the workforce, and where those three converge. Welcome to the show, Tracy. Glad to have you on. Why don't you give us just a little bit of information about yourself and your background?
Well, thank you very much, Ken. My name is Tracy Weiland-Dugenty, and I'm the Vice President and Managing Director of the Apollo Research Institute. And our mission is to study the importance, value, and future of education as it relates to top workforce trends. We are an academic institute, and we publish a number of reports on our website called theapolloresearchinstitute.org.
Great. And what is your educational background?
Absolutely. Thank you. My educational background is an MBA and a PhD. I specialize in business and technology. I have researched and published over 9 books on the topic of technology and women's studies. I am currently a visiting scholar at Stanford University and have been held executive roles in high-tech firms where I live in Silicon Valley, such as Apple, Hewlett-Packard, and Cisco Systems.
And do you act as a consultant for those high-tech firms?
No, although firms readily and frequently use our research to help them with some of their strategic planning, I do collaborate with many of the high-tech firm and education and local communities to understand the key trends in technology.
I see. So you don't have any particular affiliation with any of the high-tech companies like the ones you mentioned?
The way that an Apollo Research Institute works with high-tech companies or any of our companies is that we have regular research expert workshops, and many of the key executives engage with us and help us shape our research. So it proves to be very beneficial for both them as well as us.
You know, our topic today is hot jobs in the tech industry in 2013. In fact, jobs is a very important topic that we're all interested in. In fact, it was a huge topic last night in the presidential debates. Tell us, what are your general thoughts about jobs for 2013? What is the outlook for tech jobs?
Well, in our research, we found that technology is a main driver, and I think one of the areas that people haven't paid attention to is how fast technology has really encompassed our lives. If you think about when I graduated from school, it was a very classical world. A liberal arts degree or a high school degree could pretty much get you the majority of positions available in the market at that time. Today, graduates are facing a technology-oriented world where the projections are that 70% of the jobs by 2020 will have a technology requirement or component. And so the world has shifted very rapidly, and we need to think about what kind of jobs there are.
And what do you see as the big trends in jobs for 2013? Is it programming? Is it support? Or where should a person kind of focus their efforts if they're looking for a job?
So the three main areas, and this is all in the Bureau of Labor Statistics report, the three main areas that will have increased growth over the next year and continuing is healthcare, manufacturing, and then more specifically in nursing. As you know, there are shortages in technology-oriented jobs. So, for example, in STEM, for every one worker, every two STEM jobs are still open. So we have a lot of unfulfilled jobs in that particular area.
And how do you think the economy is going to affect jobs going forward in 2013? Do you think there's going to be a lot of growth in the tech sector, or do you think it's more service-oriented?
Well, business services is always a large growth area for the United States, but I think what people need to think about increasingly is the technology integration with a lot of jobs. So, for example, if you work in manufacturing today, you will see things like 3D printing. You will see a lot of robotics. So you actually need people who can run both the technology side and understand manufacturing. In fact, one of the skills that was identified in our expert workshop is called a TE person, transdisciplinarity. What that means is that you really need to have breadth and depth in an area. And also, I would add a technology proficiency.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, there's one thing that they did talk about last night, again, in the presidential debates, is offshore outsourcing. We're seeing a lot of technical and non-technical jobs going offshore to South America, Central America, India, and other places. What do you think about that trend as far as affecting jobs and job growth here in the United States?
Well, there's a couple of points that we can talk about. One, it is an eBay to ODesk world today. So what that means is eBay, I can go out and actually open a global marketplace store in about an hour and take in global funds and ship globally. So we've become a great opportunity for anyone to be able to open up a marketplace. At the same time, you have a startup called ODesk. And ODesk is a place where employers can go and actually find educated talent anywhere in the world who are bidding on specific projects, such as creating videos, doing analytics, creating websites, doing a number of tasks and functions at a much lower cost. So your competition is no longer your neighbor. It can be anyone in the world. This is not going to go away. At the same time, you have the rapid acceleration of technology. You might be reading in the news that robots are actually replacing manual workers in factories in places in Asia. So the cost curve will continue to drop. That may drive technology back into the United States. We have here in Silicon Valley, a number of firms are using robotics as a way to create efficiency in manufacturing. So the point here is to think about skills and education and how to continue to drive employment in your areas and in your sectors and in your metro locations.
You know, my oldest son just started college this year, and it's kind of a topic that we've talked about several times. What would you advise, if you could advise? I mean, I don't know what your exact role is in that respect, but if you could advise new college students, let's say you were talking to a group of freshmen, what would you say to them as far as majors? I mean, should they major in, say, journalism? And when, you know, college costs or, you know, you might come out of college with $150,000 in student loans, when that's kind of a low-paying job, or should they seek out something more lucrative? And what would that be?
So I'll give a couple of pieces of advice because I do talk to students all the time. I've taught for over 15 years at night and then on weekends with people who are working and going back to school. There's one shift that people need to be aware of. What extreme longevity is what we frame the concept as. You know, when my parents graduated, whatever it was, high school, whatever they did, their expectation was to work for 25 years. My expectation is I need to work for 50 years. That's a big shift. So, you know, from the point where your son is entering college and exiting college, his skills and education might be antiquated. And the reason is that technology has moved so quickly. If you think about YouTube, Facebook, and Apple products and how rapid they've been produced in the last 10 years, we all have to keep sharp. So some of the points for college students is, you know, number one, parents should be helping students understand that there's so many more roles and opportunities out there than when we went to school and when we started working. In fact, there's over 33,000 jobs type today, and that's far more than were available when I went to school. So one, provide visibility for students. You know, if they like gaming and they want to work at Electronic Arts or Facebook or Google, show them how to go to the website, look at the jobs, understand how to connect the dots. What are the skills and requirements to work at these companies? Number two is introduce them to people. Even if you don't understand a job or a job category, try to find people to introduce them to, so that they can see how the dots get connected in real life. So, for example, a woman noted that her daughter would be a great scientist, but her daughter was getting messaging that she had to spend her life in a lab. So her mother, who didn't understand the scientific, you know, field, found someone who worked at a pharmaceutical company who was a woman who was traveling the world and having a great career and connected her daughter to him. So your question is, what can schools do? They can start early. Orientation is a fantastic way to expose students to companies and individuals who are doing things, HR departments, and helping them understand how to plan out their careers while they're going to school. I'd also encourage your son not stop. One of the comments in Silicon Valley from key executives was, how do we make sure that people are still thinking and thinking creatively at the same time as thinking computationally? And this whole idea of having both sides of your brain stimulated in the college years. So it's nothing wrong with taking music, art, or journalism, but it would be much stronger if it was integrated with computer sciences.
That's good advice. The good advice, too, to hook up with somebody who's actually in a particular field. I know a psychologist friend of mine who was at the time in his mid-30s. He said, how the heck does an 18-year-old kid know what a 35-year-old man wants to do with his life? And which brings up a next question. What about career changers? When you find yourself in a career that you don't really like, you've studied for it, and you've gotten a degree in it, you may have even worked a few years, what can career changers look forward to in, say, 2013?
Absolutely, and I think that happens to many of us. Many of us think that we want to move in a direction, and then we realize that it isn't really what we wanted in the first place. So, number one, if you're working, stay working, and develop a plan while you're working on what do you need to do to make these shifts. You know, what is your game plan? Maybe you really do want to be an entrepreneur. Well, you can use your nights and weekends to figure out a plan. Or maybe, such as in my case, I was in manufacturing for a long time and realized that that wasn't my eventual calling. So I looked into what kind of courses can I take at work. You know, it'd be amazing at how much course offerings are with employers, both in the leadership, finance, strategy side, as well as on the technology side. And then start talking to people, ask people, you know, what is it that you do? And try to live and understand in their world what it is and if that's fit for you. Another area is volunteering. A lot of people would love to have people volunteer, healthcare in particular. So maybe you think that healthcare is your calling. Well, you can always try one course and see if you like the topic. But two is you might want to try to volunteer at a local center or hospital to see is that your calling or not. Those are just some examples.
You know, that also brings up an interesting point. How do you create a career plan for yourself? I mean, most of us just work until we don't work, or work until we get laid off or find a job that pays, you know, a couple thousand more dollars a year. I mean, how do you really develop a career plan that says, here's where I am, here's where I want to be, and how do I get there?
You know, it's a good question, but it's really no different than any other business plan, financial plan that you would plan in your life. It's the same as buying a house. What's, you know, what is the ultimate goal? Where do I want to live? And you set up goals and short-term goals. You know, especially if you're, you know, if your lifespan is increased and you're going to be working for 50 years, you may be outliving many firms. So you do have to think about how am I going to financially live longer, right? And projections are to 100, and many of us know people in the hundreds. How am I going to stay healthy longer? How am I going to stay educated longer? And then how am I going to stay employed longer? So let me give you a very fascinating example. A woman who is 67 and a very close friend of mine is working, and she has a master's in IT, which is a very strong degree, by the way, and she's working as an IT director for a major university. However, her plan says she needs to work as long as she can. She's figuring if she can stay healthy to 80, she'll be working till then. However, she's very sensitive of her age, and she's also looking quickly at what are the occupations that she should target as a seasoned person in her late 60s who want to work to 80. Her feeling is that healthcare, particularly gerontology, is the space. We have more baby boomers who are retiring. There will be more services and requirements needed, services population. So she is taking gerontology certifications at night and on weekends and thinking through a plan for the next 10 to 15 years. And I think this is very smart. It's an encore career. And I think it's something that all of us should be thinking through, you know, short term, midterm, and long term. How can we get there?
You know, you touched on this briefly just a few minutes ago when you said something about entrepreneurship. Do you think that more people will start going into business for themselves rather than seeking traditional employment? Or do you think that traditional employment is still going to be a very strong trend in the coming years?
I think that entrepreneurism is an opportunity. It's an opportunity that many of us did not have because it was so expensive. But today, because of the internet, as I mentioned, eBay, you can actually enter entrepreneurism at a much lower cost. Many people have actually fallen into it just out of need because of layoffs and found that they actually are quite good at, have a skill or have an expertise and can freelance and create what we call portfolio careers, which is, I have an expertise, I'll go out and start some consulting, oh, and then that person referred me to somewhere else, and now I'm building up a variety of expertise and opportunities, and hey, I'm pretty good at it, and I'm making more money than I did in the workplace. And so I do see it as an opportunity, particularly for our young people. For the seasoned community, many of us are just being instructed that we always work for a firm, so it's harder for us to envision ourselves as entrepreneurs or freelancers. My suggestion is to look at some of the small to medium-sized firms. As you know, that's the growth engine in the United States. These are firms that could use seasoned expertise. And my sense is that if you're only thinking of working for a large firm, you may want to think about sharing your expertise with some smaller firms that really value and benefit from your experience.
Are there any particular jobs for, say, 2013 and beyond that you would steer people away from? I mean, for example, you know, 100 or more years ago, blacksmithing was a big deal, and they thought blacksmithing would never go away, but it pretty much has, I think. So are there any new blacksmithing jobs that you would say stay away from these?
Well, you know, I'll tell you a funny story that really isn't so funny. I was up in San Francisco because I live in the Bay Area, and I had just finished my Future of Work think tank with a number of executives and thought leaders. And I jumped into a taxi cab, and the taxi driver asked me, you know, what are you doing in the Bay, you know, in San Francisco? So I explained it to him. He said, Tracy, I'm not going to have a job in a couple of years. I said, what? Taxi drivers? You're safe forever. He said, no. Google developed the robotic car, which they did, and it will be going mainstream as a hybrid Toyota car in 2018. But what happened is Google applied for taxi permits in downtown San Francisco. And when you think about it, a robotic car or an autonomous car can potentially be much safer than an individual driving a taxi cab because, number one, you don't have cell phones, right? You don't have the drivers eating, shaving, putting on makeup or using their cell phones or even worse, texting. Number two is you've opened up the opportunities for handicapped people to actually have their own vehicles without worrying about, you know, controls. Well, as I read into it, I found out that Las Vegas has already approved these cars. So my sense is that maybe a taxi driver may not be the ideal career path to follow, at least in the Bay Area and in Nevada.
That's interesting. That's one I never thought would go away. That's even better than blacksmithing. So, you know, here's an interesting question. I know that I noticed this back in the mid-80s when I was out of work myself. I saw thousands of jobs in the newspaper. I was in Dallas, Texas at the time. Thousands of jobs, pages after pages of jobs available. And then I saw myself and thousands of people out of work. And it's happening again. I mean, what do you think the disconnect is?
Yeah, and, you know, I can empathize with that because I was in Silicon Valley in the 80s and faced with a world that I could not get employed. And here I had transferred out from the East Coast with sales management experience and a liberal arts degree and for a very prominent firm. And I was shocked that I couldn't get a job. So the first thing I did is I started to temp. And I think a lot of people don't think about that, but that isn't a way to get into firms. And what I did is I signed up with all the temp firms and said, even if it's one day and there's five different days at five different companies, I need to understand what these companies are looking for. I need to understand the culture and I need to understand what skills I need to develop. And by doing that, I learned computers, which is critical in Silicon Valley, and I learned three operating systems through temping. I also got to know people. And as you know, many of the jobs are secure today. Recruiters would tell us over 85% are still through networking. Well, if you're brand new in a city or if you're out of work, how do you network? Well, temping and staffing firms are a great way to get inside. The other is that there are these secondary type of staffing firms. The one that comes to mind in the Bay Area is M Squared, where they actually work with people who are more seasoned and have more experience to help them start their consulting. It's more like a consulting opportunity. And there are so many sites now bubbling up with connecting entrepreneur types of activities with seasoned consultants. Elance is another one that was just mentioned to us. And there's one for lawyers. So there are ways for you to experience and find out how to get into firms. But I hear you. I've had the same experience.
You know, you say that temping and contracting are good alternatives, and I agree. I think those are very good alternatives for people trying to get back into the mainstream workforce. But let's look at the other side of the coin now. For employers, is it better for employers to hire a full-time employee or to give it time to vet that employee with, say, a contract or a temporary contract?
You know, I think a lot just depends on the job. There are certain positions, particularly at the management and executive level, that employers would probably opt not to bring in a contractor because of the amount of internal visibility that they have to provide to the employee. So I think many employers would probably prefer to have people behind the firewall, so to speak. But there are a lot of positions that can be fulfilled through specific expertise, and that the knowledge of the individual doesn't have to be as deep behind the firewall. And those lend themselves at all levels very well to consulting. So you have to remember that another option for people is the whole virtual organization. There are many jobs out there, and some, you know, employers such as Cisco, IBM, Pricewaterhouse, Deloitte, many consulting firms prefer to have individuals at a distance because they're closer to their customer base. So you might find opportunities virtually that you never thought of, even though the company might be headquartered in San Jose, for example. There are a number of job opportunities out on the East Coast. So I wouldn't discount virtual opportunities either.
And one final question. What is your best advice for someone who is looking for a job or a career change?
So I'll just give you the advice that we have a pool of recruiters that we work very closely with to keep on top of the market. Number one, they still say that networking is the predominant way to find a job. Now, today we have so many more opportunities because you have social technology such as LinkedIn and Facebook. Number two, if you're looking for a job, it's probably time to refresh your resume. It has changed. I went through an exercise myself with resume writing firms, and the way that you format and position your experience has dramatically changed from when I was starting to look for a job. So that's number two. Number three is get advice. Now, some people, if they don't have friends and family, you can be objective and help them. There are career services out there, either career coaches, that are many times offered through the University Alumni Association. And those I would, you know, really consider so that you're with groups that understand what you're going through. And then the fourth area is a lot of individuals who we're interviewing now have felt that keeping connected to associations in their industry have been a way for them to keep current and connected with the community of experts where they want to work. So if you're in real estate, you know, the real estate association. If you're in IT, the IT association, and so forth.
Well, I appreciate you coming on today, and I'm sure our listeners would love to know how to get in contact with Apollo Research Institute, if you could tell us how to do that.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. We do have a newsletter, so people can certainly sign up. It's just once a month, and we let you know what research we're releasing. And our website is ApolloResearchInstitute, all one word, .org, O-R-G.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate you coming on today. And if you ever have any new news or updates or research you'd like to let us know about, please give me a call.
Thank you very much.
Today, I've been speaking with Dr. Tracy Weiland-Dagenti of the Apollo Research Institute. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on ZDNet.